With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everybody, this is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
Hello, welcome to the Groovy podcast. And the Cricket Badger Show. My name is Lucas, aka 3 Points Magic King, and of course our England representative, James Butler, the Cricket Badger. And James, thank you so much for joining. Probably not the start that you wanted, but I must say it has put a smile on my face, this result.
I can't believe that you've invited me on this and you are just laughing at me. I mean, how rude.
Oh, is this
you can contain yourself, can you?
It's one of those days for me, you know. We got Belder in Sri Lanka and I said we'll get you back. I didn't know it would be this soon. I thought I'd have to wait till the Ashes after we've got belted in Sri Lanka to get you back. But this has been very nice indeed to only get you back this early. Shall we get into the game?
Do we have to?
Of course we have to. We've got a lot to talk about. England's top order, they're keeping, they're bowling. So we'll start the first test. Lords started on the 17th of August. South Africa won the toss and decided to bowl first. And England did not get off to a great start, James. In fact, it was really a one-man show with Ollie Pope scoring 73 in a lone hand.
He was obviously... going back to kind of trying to give some kind of mitigating circumstances. It was a big toss for South Africa to win. I know both sides would have opted to bowl first. And generally speaking, I tend to think that 99% of the time you win the toss, you bat first. But that was one of the one percenters. It was very much a cloud-covered Lords. There was a little bit of moisture, I think, around. And definitely the right decision for Dean Elgar, as it proved, taking the top order pretty cheaply, 55 for 4 when Johnny Bairstow fell. As you mentioned, I think Ollie Pope can be quite proud of that innings of 73, showing signs. He's not the finished article yet, but he's certainly showing signs of showing some aptitude for batting at number 3 in that order. But Rabada bowled beautifully, as you tend to find. I think he's right up there. I think my Fab Four, we talk about the Fab Four for batting quite a lot, but my Fab Four for bowling would be Bumrah, Cummins, Shaheen Shoaib-Afridi and Rabada. And I think Rabada certainly isn't the last of those four either. I think, you know, you've certainly statistically, he's as good as anybody. You know, his strike rate is tremendous. And he knows exactly what he was doing with that ball. And there were some concerns about his fitness prior to the test match. But, you know, it was a big moment for South Africa when he rocked up fit and ready to go. And taking Pfeiffer. I thought one of my favourite moments of the Test match actually was at the end of the innings. He picked up the final wicket and he walked off and he did the little sign, "I want to be on that honours board. Get me on that honours board." Because it's a big thing, isn't it, for any player to get themselves on the Lord's honours board. Absolutely. And Rabada was all smiles after taking a Pfeiffer, and quite rightly deserves to be on there. And, you know, he's in good company on that honours board, and he's certainly not, he's not on there by accident. He's on there because he's a very good bowler.
Bada was unbelievable. We've seen firsthand what he can do. He did in Australia. I've seen firsthand what he can do in Australia, where he just demolished our team back in Hobart in 2017, I believe, where we had to completely change our team. He's a world-class bowler. You mentioned him in the Fab Five and or the Fab Four, whatever you want to call it. Absolutely, I agree 100% with that. Just completely bullied the openers, Zach Crawley, Alex Les, got rid of them, and then he cleaned up the tail, picked up 5 wicket. Or as you said, get my name on the leaders board. He will do that in a prestigious ground like Lords. Absolutely fantastic, Rabada. I've had some doubt about Norky. I think he slipped away as a weight. I criticised him heavily in this Test match. What was I wrong about that? He was fantastic. His pace, he doesn't bowl 145 no more. I think he's gave up that pace a little bit for accuracy, same with Rabada. Remember, Rabada used to bowl 145, sometimes 150. But Norky was also superb in that first innings, James, knocking out the middle order, Johnny Bairstow, Ben Froakes, Ben Stokes. I thought Norky was just as potent in that middle order as Rabada was on that top order.
I think in both innings as well. The wicket or the ball that he got Johnny Bairstow out with apparently was the fastest wicket-taking ball in Test cricket this year. And he bowls rapid. You know, he really gets it down there, 93, 94, 95 miles an hour, which is fast. You know, the difference between 85 and 90 is huge. The difference between 90 and 94, 95 is massive. That ball is past you before you've even known it's left the hand, unless you're on your game. The Bairstow shot looked a little bit loose, but when it's coming down at that speed, you've got no margin for error at all.
Yeah, well, it's a bit like Jofra Archer when he was bowling to Smith in the Ashes. It's a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, he's quick. Norky is quick. And, you know, you combine, I think this South African side, I think a lot of England fans have not disregarded, but have treated them a little bit lightly, because there's been, for people not paying close attention, this South African side, if you're judging it on where it was about 2 years ago, 18 months ago, it was a fairly poor side in transition, wondering where it was going. But since Dean Elgar's taken it on, they've really come on leaps and bounds. I like Dean Elgar as a cricketer. He's a fairly straight-talking kind of guy, plays the game the right way, respects Test cricket. But I think he's got this team in his kind of image now. He's got a very good bowling attack with Norky and Rabada. You know, you back that up with Jansen, who I think is a really good prospect as an all-rounder. You've got Maharaj, who's a very fine left-arm spinner. You've got the prospect of bringing in, I mean, Ungidi's a good bowler. You've got the prospect of bringing in Simon Harmer if you want to play two spinners. So that's a very good bowling attack. And although it's a reasonably inexperienced batting attack, none of them are young pups, really. They're kind of guys, the guys with a few years behind them that maybe not played a lot of Test cricket, which is a different thing from throwing in a lot of 18-year-olds. And we saw with Irvi in the first innings for South Africa, I thought he batted really nicely. Elgar is made of granite, isn't he? He doesn't give anything away. He was very unfortunate with his dismissal. So all in all, you know, this South African Test team can't be treated... Yeah, I think it's probably, you know, some Indian fans might argue with this, but I think this is England's hardest task or test of this English summer. New Zealand aren't quite the side they were a year ago. India coming across for one match is always going to be tough for them to raise their standards for one match. Obviously a very fine side, but England won that game. I think this South African series is the hardest test for England this summer, and they couldn't have got off to a worse start. You know, it's the end of the honeymoon of Buzzball.
Thank you.
badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls.
Well, to your point, South Africa, the informed side of the year. They beat India. They had a good result against New Zealand. And they've come over here and they've won the first test. So they are the informed team of the ICC and as far as test match cricket goes.
A lot of people, I think, saw the game that South Africa played against the Lions ahead of the test match at Lords where...
Yeah, I did see that, yeah.
They got thumped.
Yeah.
The Lions, yeah, they got 400 odd. Lions racked up 600 odd and then bowled out South Africa cheaply in the second dig. And but you can't read anything, I don't think, into a warm-up match. You know, South Africa, the whole purpose, the whole point of playing a warm-up game is to warm yourself up because you're cold. And they use that match cleverly to get some overs into bowlers to, you know, get a bit of time in the middle and to warm themselves up, and obviously came into Lords a little bit hotter as a result of that.
Quick, with SM said, Rabada is a world-class bowler, the best of the current South Africa lot. Agree with that?
I absolutely agree. And I actually think you can make an argument to say he's the best in the world. I mentioned the likes of Cummins and Bumrah, Shaheen Shah Afridi. You can bring in Jimmy Anderson. There's Hazelwood, Stark, a few others around the world. Nasim Shah for Pakistan's bowling rapid at the moment. But I think Bumrah's strike rate, Bumrah's consistency, Bumrah's ability to test anybody, he is right up there, up there.
Going into South Africa's first innings, I'll go back to that warm-up game a little bit later because we're going to talk about a couple of players from that game. Going on to South Africa's first innings, they got off to a really great start, James, as you mentioned, Elgar,
you're cutting out a little bit, Lucas. Is your microphone under your chin or something? Because you're cutting out a little bit.
Started very well with their first innings. Dean Agar, Elgar, sorry. Help me out with this pronunciation, James, the other opener.
Irvi, I think.
Irvi made a 73. They all made starts. I've got the scorecard here if anyone's looking at James. Every one of them made a start, James. Now, they couldn't make that big 100. But it went to show that these batsmen dominated the bowling. And it showed they made 326. The tailenders of Maharaj, Norky made runs. So it was really a dominant display by South Africa. And at times, very bizarre, poor bowling from England, especially Ben Stokes. I thought his bowling was a little bit poor at times. I think his captaincy was a little bit poor at times, bringing himself on then bowling short. I want to get into that a little bit later as well. How did you see the bowling side of England?
I think England tried to bowl... They try too hard for wickets. And that's sometimes when you're bowling, that's the worst thing you can do. You know, you just basically bowl well and let the wickets come to you. Whereas they went in the hunt of wickets. And I thought Elgar and Irvi at the top of the South African order were exceptional. You know, a stand of 85... for the first wicket. Irvi, I spoke to Toby Radford, who's been a regular guest on the Cricket Badger podcast in the past, worked with West Indies, Bangladesh, plenty of the top players around the world, has worked a little bit with Cyril Irvi. I think he said about 8 months ago, where he spent about 8 hours in the nets with him, trying to get his trigger movements right and get him balanced. And he said, you know, he's one of the hardest working players that he's worked with. And you could see the kind of, in the way he played, you could see that he was working very hard out there. I mean, it's always a shame, I think, for anybody that gets a 50 at Lords, they don't make it into 100 and get themselves onto that honours board.
Yeah.
You know, but his 73 will be an innings that he remembers very fondly.
Absolutely.
You know, particularly as he went on to win, his team went on to win the match, runs in a winning cause are always better, aren't they? And
absolutely,
Keegan Peterson, I think, is a very good player. Aidan Markram is a very good player. I hadn't actually realised until somebody said it in this test match that Markram is actually a palindrome. You know, you read it forwards and backwards, it's exactly the same, isn't it? And there's very few of those around. I thought Rassie van der Dussen looked a little bit off the pace. He didn't look quite the player I've come to admire. You know, he seemed to be a little bit off balance. But then Marco Jansen, getting into the lower order, Marco Jansen, I thought, batted really nicely for his 48. Verein, the wicketkeeper batsman, looked okay for his 11 as well. But that stand between Jansen and Maharaj yesterday evening, they kind of went to England and it came off and really meant that, day two was South Africa's day. And obviously Jansen played within himself, I think, on the third morning, but continued to get to 48. Henrik Norkje came in and swung the bat a little bit after being sort of bounced at and made 28 not out. And in the end, that lead of 160 odd on the first innings in a relatively low scoring match, a lead of 160 is priceless, isn't it?
I mentioned you in a tweet. I said to you that I think England have got carried away with their short bowling to tail-enders because they've seen Australia do it to them. Mitchell Starc, Pat Cummins, Hazelwood to an extent. And England have tried to do the same thing. I thought Stokes today was very poor. I loved how he tried something different. He opened with Matt Potts and himself, but he's not that type of bowler to bowl that short, James. He has done it in the past. I understand that. You know, with Starc, with Cummins, with Hazelwood, they all bowl 140 plus. Hazelwood's gone a couple of notches down over the last 12 months, but they can penetrate the pitch and they have the ability to get extra from that pitch by bowling that way. With all due respect to Ben Stokes, that's not his go. That's not Matthew Potts' go. I thought they got that horribly wrong early this morning, James.
I just don't understand. They started off this morning with three overs to go before the new ball. You've got arguably the best new ball bowler in the world, certainly in English conditions, in Jimmy Anderson. And he never touched the ball on the third morning. I mean, that's his job. That's what he's become famous for. That's how he's taken so many wickets. He's using that new ball and bowling well with it. I mean, I assume that he wasn't injured. If he was injured, why on earth was he out there? So why was he not given that new ball? It made no sense to me. Stuart Broad as well. Where was he? I know what you're saying about starting off with Potts and Broad and Stokes being okay, but why, you know, you got three overs to go before the new ball's taken. Give it to Anderson, give it to Broad, and give them those three overs to get warmed up, and then they got the new ball in the hand. It made no sense whatsoever. I think there's a danger with Ben Stokes. I think his captaincy on the whole has been very good this summer. But there's a danger with Ben Stokes that this Baz ball, I mean, I hate the tag, Brennan McCullum hates the tag, but it's kind of become shorthand for this new kind of positivity that's going through this England side. I can understand them wanting to do that, and I'm fine with positivity. You know, when you got a couple of choices in a match, you take the more aggressive option. That's fine. You can defend aggressively. There's no issue with that. I just think Ben Stokes is going too far with it. He's trying to almost show the rest of the England team, this is how we're going to play. I'm going to be ultra aggressive with the ball. I'm going to be ultra aggressive with the bat. And it's not quite working for him. He's a better player than that. Matthew Potts is a Jimmy Anderson type, you know, stick it up there and let it do a little bit of moving around. He's not a bouncer bowler. And this is something that isn't just today. This is something that England have been doing for some time, struggling to get out the tail. And I tweeted yesterday, it's like somebody suddenly goes, right, we got them six down, lads, bounce them out. And how many times has that actually worked for England? Not very many. How many times has it actually backfired against England when the likes of a Bumrah or something gets in and suddenly starts swinging and ends up taking the match away from them? They have no clue, in my opinion, how to bowl at tail-enders.
Yeah.
And this is a long-standing thing for England. This isn't just this summer.
And that's why I mentioned to you that they've probably seen Australia do it to them. As I said, not let's take out Starc, Cummins, and Hazelwood, but previous Ashes years with Mitchell Johnson, Brett Lee, and they've seen to me, in my opinion, that they've gone by that. Well, Australia did it to us, so let's do it to other opposition. And like I said, that don't have the penetrating bowlers to do that. Bowlers that they can do that with is not playing. That's Joffre Archer and Mark Wood.
Yeah. I mean, Stokes has got a good bouncer. There's no issue with that. Stokes has got a good bouncer, but when every single ball is short, I think it devalues the bouncer. When you get it right, they're ready for it. You know, the whole point, surely, is that you bowl a good line and length, you get it top of off stump, you try and get a few to go away, you try and get one to nip back in, and then you bowl a bouncer as a surprise delivery to kind of suddenly get one up the nose of a tail ender. And they don't like it short, but they can set themselves when every ball is short. Whereas when it's a surprise delivery and there's one or two in an over, then that makes it a different kind of kettle of fish. And I just think England, they've got this kind of one trick pony kind of thing. I also don't like the fields they set either. When you get a batter in, Jansen this morning, he's never scored a test match 50. That 48 is his highest score in test cricket. His previous best was, I think, 38 not out. And yet they are treating him as if he's Viv Richards. They're setting the field back and they're attacking the other player. Now, Jansen, early doors on the third morning when he's having to start again, is as susceptible to a good ball as any of the tail enders are. And if it's a good, I tweeted it the other day, if it's a good ball to Dean Elgar or a top order batsman, it's an even better ball to Henrik Norkia or one of the lower order batsmen. You basically bowl your best balls and then throw in a bouncer every now and again to surprise them. All of this kind of funky fields and bowling bouncers as if that's good. All right, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to get in their faces. It fails as many times as it works, or probably fails more times than it works.
Like you said, after when they brought Broad back into the attack, he pitched it up. And guess what, James? Mm. He got the two wickets.
I know. It's not rocket science, is it?
Yeah. So it's extraordinary that they did that. And
I don't get it, Lucas.
Yeah. Mentioned it, James, that it doesn't work. It's never worked.
No.
Why are they consistently doing it?
I saw Joe Root sort of tongue-in-cheek at one stage in an interview. I think it was just after his captaincy ended, or might have been just before. You know, we've never really known how to bowl at tail enders. He admitted that. I watch a lot of cricket and I'm thinking, this is wrong. This doesn't make sense.
That's garbage.
There are some good cricket brains in that England dressing room who have played a lot of cricket and know how the game works. Why is nobody saying, this isn't right? This is just not, use the bouncer as a surprise tactic. Maybe have one or two overs of just bounce, bounce, bounce if you want to. But as a general rule of thumb, let's just bowl good balls at tail enders and get them out.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The England second innings actually started good, James. I think they hit a partnership of 20. That seems to be like a 100 these days for English cricket.
This analysis of England's second innings is not going to take long, is it? Because the innings didn't.
It's not. This time, Maharaj was fantastic. I don't think he bowled a single over in the first innings. Not a single over. And then he comes on in the second innings and caused absolutely havoc.
He didn't get a huge amount of turn though, Lucas. The ball that got Zach Crawley, I mean, what the hell's he doing? I mean, we could talk about Zach Crawley for 10 hours. We could do a 10-hour podcast on Zach Crawley. But, if you're going to be sweeping the spinner, you don't sweep it off middle stump. You sweep it when it's outside off. Alex Lees aimed a few sweeps at him around about the same time, but at least he chose the right line. So when he missed it or when it hit his pad, he's outside the line of off stump. Crawley's trying to sweep off middle peg. That's probably the first time Zach Crawley's faced a spinner for a long time, because he's never got through the new ball far enough to actually get on against the spin. So I just didn't get the choice of shot. And it just strikes me that Zach Crawley is scrambled at the moment. His head's all over the place. I think with Zach Crawley, it's time to put him out of his misery. It's getting beyond the stage where this is about loyalty. I saw Paul Collingwood's quotes where he says, we don't want Zach to be consistent. We want him to just produce those match-winning innings every now and again kind of thing. And you're thinking, well, he is consistent. He's consistently poor. And the I don't doubt that the lad's got talent. I don't doubt that the lad could come, that he could come back in a in another period of English cricket and actually probably play another 50 test matches. He's got that, he's got that in his locker. But his first class record doesn't scream I'm a test match player. His test record certainly doesn't scream that I'm a test match player. He's averaging something like 17 since the double century a couple of seasons ago. And it's got to the stage now, Lucas, where he needs putting out of his misery. It's starting to become cruel to pick him and to have 24 cameras and everybody under the sun saying how poor he is. It's not nice. I actually feel for him. I feel for him in a way,
but I know this takes a massive ego, but wouldn't it be the best thing Crawley says, you know what, don't pick me. I'm going through a tough patch. Let me go back to county. Wouldn't that be beneficial?
I don't think any player would do that.
Yeah, that's what I said, yeah.
I don't, because you've got, there's a number of things.
There has to be a time, James, where you're thinking, this is, why am I even getting picked?
Well, I heard Crawley interviewed right at the start of the summer where he says, well, I wasn't even sure I was going to get the shirt. So, you know, he even knew at the start of the summer that his place was up under scrutiny. And he's not really done anything this summer to advance his cause. So I wouldn't imagine that if he gets the call or somebody taps him on the shoulder tonight and says, Zach, your time's up, mate. I wouldn't imagine it's going to come as a massive surprise to him. But, you know, as a player, I don't think you'd want to go to your coach and give him the message that you don't think you're up for it. I think as a player, you'd want to try and give the coach the message that you're able to battle through this. You're determined to make it work. Now, I imagine it would all. I've got a horrible, funny feeling that if Zach Crawley is touched on the shoulder by Brendan McCullum today, and he said, "We're not picking you for Manchester," I don't think he will A, be surprised, and B, actually might feel like a weight off his shoulders, because it must start to become become something you're not looking forward to doing. And if you're not, you know, it's like anything, if you're not enjoying it and you don't feel like you're contributing, that must be a very, very tough thing, particularly in the first four test matches where everybody else was smiling and joking and laughing and positive because Basball was amazing and Zach's still struggling. It almost the defeat to South Africa. Yeah, you tend to find that a winning team stays together. When you start to lose, that's when you start to make the changes. So it may be the defeat gives them the opportunity to actually say to Zach Crawley, you know, disappear, go back to Kent, get runs. We'll talk to you again soon. And it's an opportunity for somebody else to come in. Daft thing about the summer that England have. Yeah, you devote August to the 100. When was the last time a potential replacement, even a Harry Brook played in the Lions game, Keaton Jennings did, Ben Duckett did. So they had the Lions match.
But yeah, we'll mention them in a minute, James.
Oh, you suddenly I can hear you properly.
Because I've taken out my headphones now.
That's a million times better. So, you know, all of those candidates, but your Ben Comptons and some of the others that were in contention earlier on in the summer haven't played for 5 weeks. So, yeah, you've got to get a domestic schedule that at least, you know, supports the test series so that you've got the potential to go to a county and say, right, we're going to take him because he's just scored 200 against Lancashire or whatever. There's nobody doing that because they're not playing.
Yeah, I agree 100% what you said. You know, Australia have the same problem when India absolutely torched us. We couldn't rely back on other players because they weren't playing Sheffield Shield, they were playing the Big Bash. So I think that's a problem everywhere, not just in England. Back to the second innings, we'll just get rid of this out of the way. I think when Johnny Bairstow got out by Norky pretty much cleaned up the middle tail, that was it. And England made 149 and lost this test match by an innings and 12 runs. This was, if you look at it like that, this was a one-way result, James. This was
South Africa were always ahead in this match.
And if it wasn't for rain, James, this could have been a two-day test.
I think even with the rain, it might just have scraped into day three, but we're nitpicking a little bit. But to be honest, I mean, one of the biggest days of the sporting calendar in the UK is Saturday at the Lord's Test match in August, and for them not even to get any play on Saturday is a big blow for yeah, the ECB, for the MCC, and for the Lord's grounds. They'll have sold a lot of tickets for Saturday at the Test match, and yeah, so that isn't good for those bodies and for anybody, you know, wanting to see a good Test match, because it has been very one-sided. I mean, I'll just finish on in terms of the second innings. You could see the celebrations when they got Joe Root's wicket, Johnny Bairstow's wicket. Yeah. South Africans aren't daft. Mm. Dean Elgar's been asked a lot about Bazball, and he's kind of shrugged it off. I've seen a few people say, well, why does he keep talking about it? He's obsessed. Well, he's talking about it because journalists are asking him about it. So he answers the question and then gets accused of being obsessed. But the South Africans will have been watching. They'll have looked at the four Test matches that England have played this summer and seen some of the fantastic days that England have had so far in 2022. And I quite liked Elgar's response. You know, we're not fussed by it. You know, we're good enough to beat them. I thought that gave out a good message. But they will have known how important Root and Bairstow have been. Because I've said to you before.
I was going to bring this up. Yeah.
If you go back through those four Test matches and you take Joe Root and Johnny Bairstow out of those scorecards, England would have been battered in each of those four Test matches. Yeah. They'd have lost by a long way. It was Bairstow. It was Root's 100 at Lords. It was Bairstow's 100 at Trent Bridge. It was Root and Bairstow at Headingley. Bairstow again in the Test against India. Without Bairstow and Root, the two Yorkies, there was nobody else backing them up. They did it almost single-handedly in those final innings. And at Lords, in this Test match against South Africa, both failed in both innings, and there was nobody else stood up to take their place.
Well, that's what I'm going to bring up exactly. Right, you know, you cannot rely on the same guy doing it over and over. This was Australia's problem 3-4 years ago. They're relying on Steve Smith. They're relying on David Warner to bail them out every single innings, they just couldn't do it.
Even Bradman, even Viv Richards, the very, very best that have ever played the game, had off games. Yeah,
and we'll get into this, but it's up to the top order, the front three. Root and Bairstow bat at 4 and 5. It's up to the front three to take pressure away from them in case they do fail. And well, they're not James.
This is a long-standing problem in English cricket. You know, the top three for England have been the talking point for probably 5 years easily.
Well, we can talk about Zach Crawley and Ollie Pope and I'm not going to do that. What I will do is, who would you replace those front? Well, I'll just give you this. You say stay or go. Zach Crawley.
Go.
Who would you replace that Crawley with? Would you go, let's go back to that Lions game. Would you get a Ben Duckett in? Would you get a Compton in? Would you get a Harry Brooks in?
I'll tell you what I think they're going to do, and I'll tell you what I would do.
Yeah.
I think what England will do is they will call up Harry Brook and they will play Harry Brook as an opener at Old Trafford in replace of Zach Crawley. That's if they drop Zach Crawley. And that's not guaranteed because he seems to have the negatives on the few people, I think.
Okay.
But what I would do, I would be concerned about that. I'm a big, big fan of Harry Brook. I think he should be.
He's not an opener, though, is he, James?
He started at Yorkshire as an opener. Didn't score many runs.
Yeah.
And the reason he's batting at five is because, obviously, he didn't actually succeed as an opener. He's a better player than that now. And, obviously, in the last 18 months, he's been phenomenal for Yorkshire and for the Lions against South Africa and what have you. So there's no doubt he's got talent, no doubt what, you know, at all. Whether he is equipped, though, to face Rabada, Norkia and Geedy with the new ball.
It's very tough.
Is a totally different. I mean, if he is, fantastic. Yeah. England have got a keeper. But I don't know if he is or not. And I think it's a little bit unfair. Yeah, you know, it used to be, even if it was an opener, you'd play them at 6 or 7, get them a few games and then maybe move them up, as they did with Ollie Pope. But to throw Harry Brook in for his debut Test match against this very good South African attack, he's asking a lot of him. He's asking an awful lot of him.
What would you, stay or go, Alex Lees?
I'd keep Lees for a bit longer. I mean, Lees has benefited from the fact that Crawley's been so poor. It has papered over his deficiencies a little bit because people have been, you know, the spotlight's been on Crawley rather than Lees. I do think there's a little bit more to Lees, though. He does seem to be able to bat longer. He does seem to be able to get through some tough periods.
Again, he was better in the second innings in this match.
But he needs a score. There's no doubt about it. You know, he's okay, but he's certainly not nailed his place down. But I'd persevere. I'd give him the rest of this summer.
Okay. Ollie Pope.
Ollie Pope stays.
Okay.
I don't think Ollie Pope's position's up for debate. I think the first innings in this test match against a very good attack when their tails were up and England were falling apart, he stayed there. That's what your number three is supposed to do. He did his job.
Do you think he's too inconsistent though? One day he can have a good innings, next a horrible innings, which we saw today.
I think, to be honest, I think if you're batting in the top three, you're going to be inconsistent. But I think he's done a lot better in that number three berth than I thought he would do.
Okay. I'll mention this player. We haven't talked about him much, but I will. Ben Froakes.
I wanted to talk about him today because I've seen a few people suggest there should be two changes for Old Trafford. They suggest that, you know, and again, you know, maybe this is the way to get Harry Brook in, is to give Bairstow the gloves, move him to seven.
Yes.
And to bring in Brook at five. But, and it's a big but, I think Folks is a tremendous player. I think he's the best keeper that England have. Yep. And I would be really sad if, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's not nailed his place down and he's not been the best in the world and he's not screamed, pick me from the top of the Eiffel Tower. But, I mean, why he'd be in the Eiffel Tower, I don't know. But the... I think he's, you know, after the weight that he's had, he's a tremendous keeper. I'd love to see him get a few more test matches, but I can see why people are saying it. I'd be sad if Folks disappears, but if you're going to give Bairstow wants the gloves. I just hope there's a number of things in this. I'd be really disappointed for Ben Folks, but nobody's owed an England test shirt and he maybe hasn't done enough. I would worry that it would be the start of messing Johnny Bairstow around again because he's been messed around in the past. You know, he suddenly got in at number five, has been told you've got to run in this position, and we've seen this summer what he's done in that position. You suddenly move him down to number seven and give him the gloves back. And then all of a sudden he has a bad couple of test matches. You know, if you're going to do that, if you're going to do that with Johnny Bairstow, and you're going to move him to number seven and give him the gloves back, don't pile on when he drops a catch. When he has a couple of matches where he doesn't score a run, don't pile on again. You know, you're going to have to basically live with it. You know, you're going to have to basically just give him the gloves, give him that seventh berth and keep him in there for 18 months and forget about criticising him every because Bairstow seems to be Marmite. As soon as he does anything wrong, people forget the fact that he's done all these amazing things. So if you're going to give him the gloves and give him that number seven berth, live with it, suck it up, and hopefully he'll be brilliant. And that might be a way of getting Harry Brooks in.
What is Ben Froakes being picked on? Is it being picked on just his keeping, his batting, or both? Now
he's being picked on both.
Because I know Alex, I keep mentioning Australian players, you know, and this is England, but Alex Carey has only been picked for his keeping. He gets smashed because he can't bat, you know, he's not the greatest batter. But his keeping is really good. That's why he's picked for. Is this the same with Froakes, or he is in there so he can contribute with the bat?
I mean, Froakes' average is 40 in first-class cricket. You know, he's not an idiot.
Yeah.
he can hold a bat. Yeah. He got a good... I mean, did he get a good ball today? Not really. He flashed at one outside, but he got a good ball in the first innings.
Yep.
Yeah, this is a good South African attack. You're going to get good balls. He hasn't done enough with the bat. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm an arch Ben Folks defender, but he's not done enough with the bat. But his keeping's very good.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I was going to say, you know, his keeping performance in India, does that put points in the bank or money in the bank for him?
He kept poorly in West Indies by his standards.
Yeah.
I think the Ben Folks' his biggest issue, he makes some very difficult takes look so easy. Nobody realises how difficult they are.
Like,
you know,
in India, yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, standing up, say, where the ball pops up a little bit, you put Jos Buttler behind the sticks, it will hit him on the left shoulder and it will bounce away for runs and his gloves will get nowhere near it. Ben Folks will just take it up here, gather it in, whip the bales off, everybody thinks, oh, good take, but they'll just move on and forget about it. Yeah. You know, sometimes you almost need to see the same delivery with a different keeper to actually realise just how good Ben Folks can be at times. His glove work is exceptional.
And then people that are watching live on and watching, listening to audio, I was actually shaking my head when James was mentioning Josh Butler. Even I don't want him back in the English team. I don't want England to suffer that much.
I'm not knocking Joss Butler. He's a terrific bloke, and his white ball record is superb.
Oh yeah,
And he's a credit to England in that regard, but he's not a Test player.
Well, I'll rephrase that. You can play him in next year's Ashes. I wouldn't mind that. That would be good.
In the run-up to the last Ashes series, I was told when I said that they should drop Joss from the team. What are you talking about? Australia was scared of him. Why are Australia scared of Joss Butler in the Test arena? Because when has he ever actually done anything to make anybody scared in the Test arena? Stick him in coloured clothing against the white ball. Everybody should be scared.
I will give you that one. He's one of probably the top three best batsmen in the world.
He's the best white ball batter in the world at the moment.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Stay or go Stuart Broad?
Do you know what? Stuart Broad's interesting. I don't think, if everybody was fit, I don't think, and I've said this for the last 18 months, I think Stuart Broad has benefited quite a lot from the fact that all of the other bowlers have gone down injured, or many of them have.
Yeah.
I don't think, I've seen a decline in Stuart Broad. Don't get me wrong, he's still a very good bowler, and he's 38 now, whatever it is, 37, and still running in and doing what he does. But I don't think he's the Stuart Broad of 3-4 years ago. And I have seen a decline in his ability to look really threatening. He still picks up wickets and he still does his job. And he still tries 100%. So I'm absolutely, this isn't a criticism of Stuart Broad, but old Father Time catches up with everybody in a sporting environment.
Except if you're James Anderson.
Well, he'll catch up with him. And I don't think Stuart Broad makes the best 11 if everybody's fit in England. And I've noticed in this Test match, a lot of the Sky commentators have been saying quite regularly, if this is going to be Stuart Broad's last summer, if this is going to be Stuart Broad's last hurrah, and it's more than just the, kind of like a throwaway line because he's getting older. They've said it regularly. And that makes me wonder if they know something that we don't, that it is actually going to be Stuart Broad's last summer as an England cricketer. And if it is, absolutely trumpets, fireworks, 1,500 gun salute or whatever, send him off with absolute praise, glory and thank yous from every England fan that's ever lived, because he has been superb for England. In this Test match, he brought up his 100th wicket at Lord's. He's been incredible. But I'm starting to wonder if we're getting to the past tense stage now with Stuart Broad, not the current tense.
Well, moving ahead, I think England, after this series, they don't play any more home series until Australia. I think they've got a tour of Pakistan in December.
Yeah.
So they probably won't play Anderson. They probably won't play Broad. They'll probably pick two spinners. Would it be more likely that James Anderson and Stuart Broad will wait until the Ashes, then retire?
If you go by recent scorecards in Pakistan, playing two or three spinners isn't necessarily the right way to go.
It's not.
Actually been the pace bowlers that have done as much damage, much damage. But England
more the reverse swing bowlers like Stark who caused havoc in Pakistan.
So, but what England will do, I mean, it's probably made for, they want to get Mark Wood fit for that series, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But what England will do is take probably three or four spinners in the squad and probably play three of them, because that's what England do. It's just kind of like colour by numbers kind of stuff, isn't it? I mean, it would almost be stupid to take Stuart Broad there, because why? Why would you? And if that is the case, then by the time they come to next summer, I mean, the other thing with Stuart Broad is, I mean, I might be a million miles off the mark with this, but...
No, go ahead. We just want your opinion, James.
He's getting married. I'm sure there's going to be the pitter-patter of little Broads around at some stage as well. He's got interest outside the game. A chair in the Sky commentary box is waiting with his name on it. It's not like he's not short of things to do. Once, yeah, because some players fear retirement because they think, blimey, how do I fill the day? How am I going to earn a living? Stuart Broad has got no shortage of options. So I don't think it's a particularly scary transition for a Stuart Broad, yeah. Whereas for some other players it might be.
James Anderson as well.
But Jimmy, I think, will go on.
After the Ashes?
I don't know about after the Ashes because I think with Jimmy you monitor him almost month by month, see how he rocks up. But at the moment he looks as fit as he's ever looked. He's bowling as well as he's ever bowled. So why would you be thinking about retirement?
I don't think he would. The way he's been bowling, I looked at some averages of his bowling since he's passed 35. I think he averages something like 22, 23. That's unbelievable. Yeah. That's unbelievable.
Glenn McGrath was similar, wasn't he?
He didn't go as long as James Anderson, though.
Yeah, but there are parallels between the two.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you can quite easily say both of them in the same breath because they are two genuine greats of the game. I mean, I often said to you on here that we should just burn Broad and Anderson into our retinas because they are in the same way that I try to with Shane Warne and Tendulkar and some of the biggest names, names that people will be talking about in cricket in 60, 70, 100, 200 years' time.
They're both Hall of Fame legends.
Whoever's doing podcast, radio and TV in 100 years, if hopefully cricket and test matches are still alive and kicking, they will be talking about Jimmy Anderson. They will be talking about Stuart Broad. They will be talking about Glenn McGrath and all the Warne and what have you. And it's an absolute honour as a cricket fan to be watching these guys doing what they do, and long may we remember them.
Absolutely, indeed. Back to the game. I did want to mention Ben Stokes and his captaincy. Now he's been picked. He's kind of really the fourth, fifth bowler, really. So you got your openers and your first change bowlers. You know, Ben Stokes bowled 18 overs. That's not something a number. We've had previous chats about this, but that's not a number four bowler bowls. 18 overs. The reason I mention this is that Jack Leach only bowled 14. Now, my point is, do you keep if Jack Leach is only going to bowl solid amount of overs, why pick him? Why would you go with another fast bowler? Like a Robinson who actually came back, played against Notts, and took 12 wickets in a game.
I think it's a really good point. And it's bizarre because I've thought for the probably the majority of the rest of the summer that Ben Stokes has underbowled himself. And he looked in pain. In that South African innings, he was limping, he was hobbling, he was grimacing. At times when he ran in, it seemed that his left leg, because it's his left knee that seems to be causing him the problems, the one that you put all your weight through. He slipped like Mark Wood slips, but he slipped when his leg gave way underneath him rather than actually slipping. Do you see what I mean? Yeah. It's kind of the knee gave way on him. So there's obviously an issue there. Ben Stokes is the sort of person that would run in with one arm hanging off and one leg hanging off, because if you told him to bowl, it's England, he will do it.
He did it with Joe Root when it was impossible to take the ball off his hand.
But this is where, this is where Brendan McCullum needs to actually sit him down, I think. And say, look, you're more used to me actually being out there on the pitch. I don't want you injured for 6 months. Because there is a danger that, if you've got a problematic knee that needs an operation, you're going to be out for however long. That's not what you need when you've just been appointed England's test cricket captain and you've got a World T20 around the corner and whatever else.
If it's just a simple clean out, that's still a couple of months.
Absolutely. So I didn't get it. I really didn't get it. One of the problems is with this England attack is that Potts, Broad and Anderson are quite similar and samey. And on a pitch which wasn't necessarily giving them a huge amount of help, albeit they did get help. Once you get settled into a rhythm against one of them, you can pretty much, you've seen one, you've seen all three. So Stokes was trying to provide that point of difference. So I can see what he was trying to do, but I just didn't get why he was compromising his own health. I do get it because he wants to give everything to the team, but I don't want you to give your legs, Ben. I don't want to give you. No. Don't want you to give your career and be out for 12 months.
Take out his madness of short pitch bowling. I thought he was pretty good with the ball.
He bowled well. I think he's a very good bowler when he's
yeah,
in,
oh yeah.
when he gets in sync, he's a very good bowler. He's a genuine test all-rounder. But yeah,
I absolutely, no doubt.
I couldn't see this. There was one spell he bowled where I thought, right, that's him done. And every over, I thought, that's him done. He just kept bowling and bowling and bowling. I'm thinking, where are you going with this? Because ultimately, the only thing you're doing here, you're not taking wickets. The only thing you're doing here is potentially really damaging yourself.
Well, as you said, you know, the new ball came and he was still bowling with it. Why would you not have, as you just said, put in the hands of your two best opening combinations?
Jimmy Anderson. In England, Jimmy Anderson, new ball, England. What are you doing? That's his job. That's what he does.
I like the idea. I thought, well, he's not going to go to them. But then he just, like I said, it was a short pitch bowling after short pitch bowling. How did you see Jack Leaper's game?
I did fear with Ben Stokes. He got a wicket early on. Well, no, yesterday with a short pitch ball. And it was a brute of a ball. It was a really good bouncer. And I thought, oh, no. I thought, yeah, great, he's got a wicket. But I thought, oh, no, that he's seen a wicket with a short ball. He's going to bowl just short balls now for the rest of this series.
Was that to Ewie?
To be fair, he didn't do. He got his next wicket with a pitched-up delivery. And he didn't get carried away. But he did. Then he came back this morning and all he did was bowl short.
Yeah, captains these days, we don't know what they're going to do next. How did you see Jack Leach's performance?
I was surprised we didn't see more of him, actually, because I thought, considering he hasn't had much bowling recently, and spinners, as much as anybody, rely on rhythm and time in the middle and what have you, I thought he bowled as well as I've seen him bowl for quite a while. He came on, first ball landed on a line, just turned a little bit, and he was very tidy.
Yeah, I thought he was okay. Well, he certainly didn't get blasted out of the attack like other batsmen have got to him previous series. But
he didn't look like Muralitharan, but he was Jack Leach.
He didn't look out of place either. No. So, yeah, no, I thought that's okay.
My name is Jacob and I sent the Badger a message and now I'm on the podcast with this jingle. If you would like to get in touch with the Cricket Badger podcast, then tweet @cricket_badger.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So that was the first test match at Lord's. South Africa won by innings and 12 runs. We go to Manchester, I believe, James?
Mm-hmm. Starting on Thursday next week.
Thursday next week. Thank you for that, because I don't have that actually in front of me. There is a couple of days off because this was ended in 3 days. So what official changes would you make? Would you bring in Robinson? What would you do?
I might bring Robinson in for Potts. I thought Potts' first spell in the South African innings was quite poor by his standards, and he set a quite high bar because he's come into the test team and really played well. I'd like to start maybe rotating Robinson and Potts a little bit and giving, Potts, certainly not dropping Potts. If he doesn't play in Manchester, it's not because he's dropped by any means. He's still very much a key part of that squad. But I'd like to have another look at Robinson. He played well in that Lions game when he was on song for England last summer. He was really good.
He was very good in that County game against Notts where he took 12 wickets in the game.
So, if he's got himself sorted in terms of his fitness and his meaning business and hungry for it again, then Ollie Robinson's right, should be playing, shouldn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Very good.
To be honest, I'd probably bring him in for Stuart Broad, not Potts.
Really? Mm. Really? Okay.
I don't think when you've got a number of pace bowlers fit, Stuart Broad's in my best 11.
You wouldn't want to do that to Anderson just to hold up his recovery, just to give him a rest here?
I don't know. I mean,
they are down 1-0, James. So you just have to pick him.
I think
he's still your best bowler.
You pick your best side, don't you?
Yeah.
You're not going to win the series if you lose the second test. So You've got to pick your best side and then see where that takes you for the third test. But yeah, in a way, that's not something you can speculate on, because that comes down to the medical staff, the strength and conditioning lot, the physios. They'll report on how they rock up tomorrow and who's fit and raring to go and who's maybe carrying a niggle or maybe isn't quite right for Old Trafford, because there's not a huge amount of time between the two test matches, despite the fact, as you said, they've got 2 extra days off than they're expecting.
Yeah, next week. Any final thoughts, James, from this test or potentially the next test?
I don't think this is a bad thing for England. I think it just reminds people that England aren't the finished article. You know, the Bazball stuff, it was exciting. Bairstow's innings, brilliant. Root's 100's brilliant. Yeah. We know that Root can bat. We know Bairstow can bat. It started to almost paper over the cracks of this England side, and there are plenty of cracks. You know, Brennan McCullum was lucky in a way that Root and Bairstow played as well as they did in those first 4 test matches, and they won playing this attractive, attacking, brilliant style of cricket. And I'm not saying that wasn't brilliant, because it was, but we saw where England can be at Lord's this week. And England are quite poor sometimes. And they weren't defeated because of Bazball. That wasn't positive attacking cricket. They just got defeated because they didn't play very well. South Africa bowled brilliantly at them. South Africa had the best of the conditions in the first innings. South Africa batted better than England. South Africa fully deserved to win that test match.
Just on that, South Africa do actually have a good record in England compared to other nations.
I think a lot of, particularly at Lords, I think a lot of away sides are really up for that well.
Just on that, you know, when back in the early 2000s, you know, when England won the Ashes 2005, there was this fear factor of going to England. You know, you think, oh, that's a really tough place to beat in England. Do you think that fear factor's gone now? Do you think it's with all this Bazball, the top order problems, do you believe that when teams go to England, they don't fear England anymore compared to what they used to?
I don't think that's changed really.
England
is strong in England. They've always been strong in England. Yeah, I'd hope that this is a blip rather than a trend, this Lord's performance. I think South Africa will find England a tougher prospect in Manchester. England just had a really poor test match. They lost the toss. It was a good thing for England, though, to lose that toss and have to bat first, because they haven't had to do that this summer, and it gave them a different challenge and they weren't up for it. You know, they need to go away and regroup and think about how they played, and there's still a lot of question marks in that England 11. You go through the scorecards of the first 4 test matches of the summer, not everybody shone by any means, and there's question marks that have carried forward into this test match, and we saw the little fractures that we were aware of in the first 4 test matches, which were kind of like hidden because the test matches finished in the blaze of glory and a victory. Those fractures have been exposed a little bit more at Lord's over the last 3 days, and England have got a lot of work to do. They're a work in progress as a side. They probably need to make a few changes over the next few test matches and head into the, in a way, the Pakistan tour this winter is the last thing England need in terms of the type of pitches they'll be playing on out there, because I think they'd have quite liked, it would almost been right to have a tour of New Zealand or a South African tour where they could continue with probably their best 11. In Pakistan, you don't necessarily play your best 11. You play your best 11 for those conditions, don't you? Which is a different kind of side. So
Pakistan, I think we just got away with that. We won 1-0. The two of those test matches were draws. But we underestimated the pitch, because it didn't spin as much as we thought it would. So when we played 2 spinners, it was kind of no point.
You end up playing your spinners as kind of stop bowlers rather than they're there to kind of keep the run rate down rather than actually taking wickets, aren't they?
Yeah, and the damages, as you mentioned, you know, going to Pakistan, the damaging bowlers were the reverse swing bowlers of Mitchell Starc. He just ran completely right with his reverse swing in that third test.
It's going to be, obviously the next 2 test matches will play a part in this, but it's going to be very interesting to see what side goes to Pakistan from England, that England pick. Yeah, they seem to, Zach Crawley seems to be seen as the golden child, and whether they'll take him there. You know, do they take Keaton Jennings because Keaton Jennings has got a track record against spinners? Yeah, do they look elsewhere? Do they stick with the nucleus? I mean, what England, like every test team, what England are trying to do is get that kind of hardcore 14-15 that is a regular pick, and they can then just kind of, you know, mix and match depending on the circumstances. But I think we'll see maybe a couple of picks from further afield.
I don't want to take the mickey out of you. Well, I do love taking the mickey out of you, especially when England lose. But this is a serious question. People might think I'm joking here. If Zach Cooley keeps on getting picked, does there need to be an investigation into something on a personal matter, whether he's got something on somebody, or is it just one of those things?
I just think I genuinely think he is a test player.
Because I can guarantee you, James, that like you said he's averaging 17 since that Pakistan 300. In general, he's averaging 20, around about 25, 27, and he's played 30 test matches.
24
and 30 test matches. No team around the world has an opener like that.
No,
they get dropped.
I genuinely think though they actually think that he is. They've seen that 267 on a little bit of flat track against Pakistan. He got a century against West Indies on a flat track. You know, his big scores have been on flat tracks. That's another thing against him, because, you know, it was reasonably easy. Even Josh Butler got a test match 100 at Old Trafford against Pakistan. So, but I genuinely think they see something in Zach Crawley where they think, well, if they can just get him right, if they could actually getting them off to a good start in test matches, it would make an awful, you know, a big difference to England. Of course it would. You know, if you get somebody that plays glorious cover drives and attacks and is busy, that's a great thing to have as an opener. But he's just not doing it, is he? I get the impression that they're kind of sitting on the balcony watching through their hands almost, thinking, come on, Zach, just get us a score so we can kind of stick with you. And he's not doing it at the moment. You know, two low scores in this match. I just think it's come to... I don't think it's the end of him as a test player. I actually like him. But, there's only so far you can take it. There's only so far you can take it, Lucas, before...
Yeah.
It, A, becomes, as I said before, cruel. And it starts, you know, you've got all of these...
This will become a mental thing. This will hurt his well-being.
You can scar somebody with doing this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you can actually maybe take away a potential comeback further down the line because they're so badly scarred by this experience. So it can become cruel. It can affect their future careers, you know, and adversely affect that, because all they're going to be remembered for is being a failure at Test cricket, even when they go back to county level. So I heard somebody talking, I think it was Atherton talking the other day about, you know, it's different when you go back to counties as an England player. Beforehand, you could play for Kent reasonably anonymously. You know, you'd only appear on the TV coverage, on the Sky Sports coverage, if you'd scored some runs. If you got out for naught, nobody would even notice.
No.
Whereas you go back as an England player. It was actually Vic Marks was talking about it. You go back as an England player. Alistair Cook, I think, and Vic Marks were talking about it on Test Match Special. You go back as an England player, you are part of the report then, because you are of interest. You know, and if you only get three runs in the first innings and naught in the second, and you failed, it is England Zach Crawley fails again for Kent.
Well, it's on scoreboards on different grounds.
You noticed because you are an England player, and you're I think it's tough on him. I really do, and I think it must be awful because your dream is to play for England. That's what you've grown up wanting to do. You've got the shirt. You've had a little bit of success, and I emphasise the word little. And it's not working for you. It's not quite happening. Your dreams are dying in front of your very eyes. I do think we sometimes over egg the pudding that playing for England isn't a be all and end all. Just being a happy person, an individual that enjoys life, is more important. Having sound mental health, having a good family around you. You know, going back to Kent, playing for Kent isn't the worst thing in the world. No. You know, most people who play cricket with any aspirations would probably take a career playing county cricket for Kent as being very satisfying and fulfilling. So it's not like it's a bad safety net to drop back to be with your mates at Kent, and to play for them isn't the worst thing in the world. And he's only young. He's got time on his side. He has got the ability to come again and to make a test career in the future. If he goes away for, I know, 6 months, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever, and suddenly cracks it and comes back with bang, 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 100, 100, 100, then he can come again. There's no reason why not.
I'll be careful with this question. If you don't answer, that's fine. But do you think he's okay mentally right now? He's at a good place?
No idea, mate.
Okay.
He looks like he's smiling and happy, but you know he wouldn't be human if it was not affecting him.
Yeah,
I tweeted about it being cruel and stuff, and I put Andrea Bocelli, you know, the opera singer, a YouTube video of him. Time to say goodbye. And somebody came back. I don't know if you're aware of the English band The Communards, and because they had a song. Oh, you never can say goodbye. It almost feels like that. It almost feels like the England selectors never can say goodbye, but it is Bocelli time. It is time to say goodbye, I'm afraid. Or say at least say au revoir.
Anyway, James, thank you so much for coming on the show. And we will see you at the end of the test number two. Hopefully, for your sake, England can win.
Oh, Lucas, you always have this kind of thing. You have this perception of me that I am driven emotionally by England winning and devastated if they lose. I'm not at all. I want to see good cricket. I want to see the best teams win. I want to see Rabada scheming in and bowling well and entertaining me. I want to see their batsmen fighting and playing proper test cricket. They out-muscled and out-test cricketed England at Lord's. I'd love to see Bairstow and Rooty and a few of the others get runs at Old Trafford. But if South Africa turn out to be the best team in this series and play the better cricket, they deserve to win it.
Podcast Network.